Welcome to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. I'm your host, Jace Kraft, and today on the show, I'm interviewing Dr. Jamie Pugh. He is a postdoctoral researcher from Liverpool John Moores University in the United Kingdom. Over his 9 years of research, he has looked at the effect of exercise can have on the GI system, as well as the effects of probiotic supplementation on endurance athletes. He's also worked as a consultant, nutritionist, and physiologist for a number of professional teams, marathon runners, and extreme endurance athletes. Today on the show, we are talking about obviously probiotic supplementation, what that entails for athletes. Is it work? Is it a placebo? Or what's the lowdown on probiotics? Here we go.
You're listening to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. Each week, we explore how to recover more efficiently from training so you can work out harder and realize your full potential. This is the Science of Sports Recovery podcast.
Hey, Jamie, it's great to have you on the show.
Jace, listen, thank you so much for having me on. It's always always a privilege to be asked to come and do these sort of things. And so thank you very much for the invite to come on today.
Awesome. Well, before we get into kind of the meat and potatoes of the conversation around gut health and probiotics and immunity and that kind of stuff, we like to understand the athlete behind the research, or, you know, the professional. So where did you start in athletics, and why does studying, you know, gut health for athletes interest you?
I was going to say, I think the athlete behind the profession on me is definitely in a looser term. So I've been interested in sport on my whole life, for as long as I can remember. And so it was always like a natural progression to sort of study it and go on to do the PhD. I always assumed that I would do research or work in football or soccer. But over time and things like that, the sort of interest in athletics and running particularly, just sort of, there was something that caught my imagination there. And maybe the scientist in me loves the fact that it's a little bit more predictable, and it's a little bit linear in some of its application. I'm not saying all it is a simple sport or anything like that. But there's something about it that you think, okay, I can see how you can adjust variables here, and you can play around with things and see what effect you have. So I think that's how some of my work evolved a little bit. And then the gastrointestinal side and the gut stuff is there's sort of two main reasons. The first pragmatic reason is that my initial funding was from a probiotics company. So I had the opportunity to carry out a PhD, and we sort of came to the conclusion that there wasn't a whole lot of research at the time looking at probiotics and athlete health. The other reason, though, is a little bit closer to home. And one of my parents actually has an inflammatory bowel disease. And so not in that these are then related, but there was already like this natural interest in this area, and knowing that, wow, it's something that so many people take for granted, I suppose, day to day, that you just eat food, and some of it is stored and some of it's chucked out, essentially. Yeah. But so they already begin to sort of see how much more complicated it was, how many variables are at the wide effect on the body that the gut and digestion and things like that can have. So once I had the opportunity, I was ready to just jump on it and say, yeah, let's do this. And I suppose that's where it started. I think maybe like 9 years ago, something maybe 8 or 9 years
ago. So it sounds like your initial kind of start was funded by a probiotics company. What were you trying to like find with probiotics? Was it performance enhancing, or was it just comfortability? You know, obviously as runners or endurance athletes, there's a lot of GI issues that could, you know, cause problems as far as hurting performance, but not necessarily performance enhancing. Like, where were you at as far as studying to start?
So the good thing was is that we were sponsored, and you know, and that's all in there for our conflict of interest and things like that, for papers that people always bring up. But we effectively had a blank sheet of paper. So myself and Professor Graham Close, who is still my the PI in all my projects, and we had this blank sheet of paper, and so it was almost up to us, where did we want to go? And the research group at Liverpool John Moores University has had, and we still have a particular way of working. And one of the things that I picked up straight away was that we need to take research from the field to the lab and back again. And so because we had this, like I said, open door, Graham sort of suggested, well, let's find out what we need to research. What are some of the issues? What are some of the impacts that probiotics could have? What do we know? What don't we know? And so one of the very first study that I did at John Moores was to just look at the incidence rate of gastrointestinal symptoms in marathon runners. So we worked with two mass participation races. We surveyed a whole bunch of the runners in the races to look at what sort of gastrointestinal problems they had during training and during the marathon itself. And then at the time as well, we were trying to see, was there an effect between what they were eating the day before or the morning of the race and during the race with some of those symptoms? And what we found in that study was that around about a quarter of the participants had symptoms that we classed as moderate or worse. And we always try and use that as sort of a minimal severity, wow, something that could affect training, something that could affect quality of life, something that could affect running performance. So it's not just passing wind or a little burp or something, yeah, like that. It is something that is noticeable. And we thought that was quite an interesting finding, that in a marathon, yeah, race, one in four.
I was gonna say, that seems pretty high.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was higher than some other studies have shown. And I think maybe that range for a marathon is, the true range is probably between like 10 and 30%, mm-hmm, somewhere for a week like that. But in terms of during training, that number does sit about there. So it's not to say that every runner, every time they set out the door, is going to have issues, but that same sort of number, so maybe like 30 to 40% of recreational runners report symptoms at some point during their running training or maybe immediately after running training. So that number sort of fit in where we were. And that almost teed up the work for me for the next 3 years. It was, okay, what are the reasons behind some of these symptoms? What are the mechanisms? Yeah. And then from a probiotic point of view, do they work? And if they do, how do they work?
So what was the theory then of probiotics? Like, what are probiotics supposed to do?
It's one of the difficult things. All of the stuff, when we start to look at the gastrointestinal tract, is difficult because it's almost this black, mm-hmm, box. I suppose from your mouth or your rectum, it's difficult to measure anything. And you have this meter long tube that has all of these different characteristics. So from your stomach to your small intestine, mm-hmm, to the different portions of your large intestine, they all have different characteristics, yeah, to them. None of which really you can measure that well without, you know, being invasive. Yeah. So probiotics can work in a number of different ways. So they can work by just being there, and some of the proteins on their outer structure of the bacteria can interact, and with your immune cells, they can interact with some of the cells that sit on the lining of your intestine. The bacteria are also metabolically active, so they are live organisms that when they're then again in your small intestines or your large intestines, they will be almost like simply they'll be eating and expelling different compounds as well, and those metabolic processes can have an effect. The other way, which may be less so for some of the stuff that we were interested in, is that they will compete with other pathogenic bacteria. Mm. So when you look at their effect on like acute episodes of diarrhea, it's almost that they just stopping the pathogenic bacteria from being able to take a foothold, essentially. So just by being there, they are competing for nutrients, they are competing for cell space effectively, with any sort of, yeah, any pathogenic bacteria. One of the ones that we were interested in was looking to see, so there's some evidence that, so when you think of your small and your large mm-hmm. intestine, you haven't got this like smooth tubing all the way. What essentially you have is cells stacked next yeah. to each other, and those cells obviously have to be held together somehow. What we know is that when you exercise, the structures that hold these cells together become a bit disrupted.
Oh, sure.
And people might know it as like leaky gut is the like the common name for it. And we know this happens even with moderate exercise. Like within 20 minutes, you can have some disruption of all mm-hmm. of these protein structures that hold your intestinal cells together. What you can then have is things that shouldn't pass through can pass through. So all of a sudden you can have this inflammatory response. You can have effects on water absorption yeah. or reabsorption. So our first port of call was to say, okay, we know this happens when we exercise, which maybe we don't, doesn't happen at rest. Could this, again, A, be one of the reasons why some people have symptoms, and then B, is it something that probiotics yeah. can target?
So how would you measure that?
So there are a couple of different ways. So the first is, so we put we give people a sugar solution drink, and these sugars are usually non-digested and non-absorbed in the body. But one of them is small enough that can naturally pass through the cells, and one of it is too big to naturally fit through the gaps between the cells. And you just measure the ratio, and then if you see that the ratio starts to increase, it means that more of the bigger one is starting to get through when it shouldn't. So we can use that. And then there are some proteins that are only found in intestinal cells. So if we see those, that isn't a measure of the gap between all of these cells, but it is a measure of some type of damage sure. within that cell. It should normally be contained. If you then have some sort of damage, or the cell dies or bursts, what you then have is more of that protein is escaping into mm-hmm. circulation. So we can measure that as well. There are lots of other indirect measures that we can use,
yeah.
but those are the two most okay. common.
So you can measure it. Then I'm assuming you tested it with probiotics versus some sort of placebo. And what did you find with that probiotics being able to hold that wall together?
So this is a really interesting thing. We actually found, so from the probiotics that we used, no effect. Really? One of the big studies that we did as part of my research a couple of years ago was we held a marathon race, but as like a research mm-hmm. project. So rather than go to an event and test all their participants, sure. we staged the race ourselves. Awesome. So we did it on an athletics track, which maybe isn't quite the same sort of route as some of the big city yeah. marathons, but we did it on an athletics track. So we knew the exact distance. It was right outside the exercise physiology lab, which meant that we could take all of these different measures before the mm-hmm. race. Because all the participants were sort of contained, we could take lots of measures during the race and then afterwards as well. But from all of the markers for permeability and gut damage, there were two interesting things. One was that there was no difference in the probiotic and the placebo group. So the level of damage was mm-hmm. about the same. But then the next interesting thing was for us was that there was also then no association between the damage and the symptoms that people reported.
Oh,
so when we looked at all of the different correlations, there was no significant correlation between them. So it's not to say that it isn't something that could potentially be clinically meaningful, but certainly from all of the things that we've done and then other groups have maybe shown mm-hmm. similar, there is a tolerable amount of damage that the gut and the body can right. Experience during an acute bout of yeah. exercise. And I think that is probably the key part of that is that it's recoverable. So we took measures about 1 hour after the race. One of the measures in particular, it was pretty much back down to baseline values within an wow. hour. So even after a marathon, so we saw these huge increases in this marker, more than what you sort of see in your typical lab-based studies that are maybe an hour or yeah. two running. Huge increases then within an hour is back to baseline.
Cool. So what you're saying basically is that that gut, it could have an effect on indigestion or gastrointestinal problems during a run, but it's likely going to be more than just that. There's several factors, and when you're looking into like a black box and trying to figure out, you know, what's coming out the other end, it's hard to know what all effects there. So did you test any other theories besides that?
So that was the main mechanism which we sort of we started to look at. We've done other studies subsequently that have looked at different factors. So we've looked at how well can you digest and then use carbohydrates that you take on during the race. So in the marathon study we did, all of the participants were taking about 66 grams of carbohydrates per hour. And then we didn't measure this in that study, but in a separate study, we've shown that after a period of probiotic supplementation, you can use more of the carbohydrates that you ingest during exercise. So that's one theory that we're doing more work on currently. There are lots of potential mechanisms by which probiotics could work, even psychological factors, other measures of short-chain fatty acids, the effect on the microbiome and some of the metabolites from that.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those that there are so many factors. We've tried to model all of the potential ways that someone could experience symptoms during an endurance race. And it's, you're talking maybe 10 to 15 factors that are then also all interrelated. So it's not like you can just study one and then move on and study the other and move on, because they're all having this big knock-on effect.
Yeah. You said something there that caught my attention, that you said probiotics you've seen better absorption of carbohydrates while during exercise. Is there any significant output to then performance? Like, because obviously in the shorter races, that's when you're, you know, absorbing carbs to do more of the work rather than say a marathon. Have you tested anything like that or seen or have any theories about how that might affect say like a sprinter or 400 meter runner?
It's a tough one. I think you're right. I think the reason we've done it is because in the studies that we've done so far is that we're looking at those races, those events during which consuming carbohydrates during the event is beneficial. So marathon onwards for running and maybe tour stage cycling and things like that. I think the energetics for shorter races, we've not looked at as much. And performance is one of those things that is so difficult to assess in the lab, because even trying to get over day to day or test to test variation, it is so difficult. So one of the study where we looked at the carbohydrate utilization. So essentially we had very well-trained cyclists cycle for 2 hours, consuming carbohydrates. At the end of that 2 hours, they did a performance trial that lasted around about 4 minutes. So it's just how fast could they complete a fixed amount of work. And on average, it took them just under 4 minutes. But what we found was that even after we got the participants familiar to the exercise bout, they just got better every time at doing it. And it's something that is difficult across research, is to really tease these all out efforts. Mm-hmm. And again, because you've got motivation, you've got pacing strategies, you've got different factors that can account for it. So the probiotic and performance, I was one of many authors on a position stand looking at probiotics and sport specifically the start of last year, 2020. And there's a section in there where we've looked at probiotics for exercise performance. And there are so few studies that have began to look at this, that I don't know if we're at a point where we can say for definite, yes, they improve performance or yes, they don't. There's some that have shown positive benefits. There are some that have shown zero benefits. I think one of the most likely ways if they do improve performance will be through indirect routes. So I think that if there's an effect, if you supplement for long enough and you're just you miss less training through illness, for example. I think that's going to be one of the more likely ways.
If you stick around and listen to enough of our episodes here on the Science of Sports Recovery podcast, you'll notice a common theme of importance of mobility in recovery and injury prevention. That's why I recommend checking out the Ready States Virtual Mobility Coach to help you improve your mobility, recoverability, and injury prevention. The Ready State is a brainchild of coach and athlete Dr. Kelly Starrett, who you can learn more about on episode 13. His virtual mobility coach program helps athletes understand the importance of recovery, pain relief, and self-care. In other words, it helps fix the recovery side of training so you can keep seeing results from your workouts. His program will guide you through the same mobilizations used on athletes in the NFL, NHL, and MLB, provide custom tools for pain relief, give you customized pre and post exercise mobilizations based on your training and sports schedule, and deliver daily mobilizations to keep you on track to achieve your goals. You put your heart and soul into your workouts. Make sure you get the most of them by going to thereadystate.com/Jace. Again, that's thereadystate.com/JASE. The link will also be in the show notes. Now, back to the show.
I think when you break down most sporting events and you think, okay, what are the key determinants of performance? I don't think there is a direct mechanism by which probiotics could influence many of those. I think our work has shown that for marathon and upwards, where gastrointestinal symptoms are maybe not one of the variables for performance, but they're certainly in terms of how fast can you go, but they're an important variable that could slow you down. Maybe there's a link there. As I said, in our marathon paper, so we did some analysis separate from the groups, and we found that the worse, the more severe somebody's symptoms were towards the end of a race, the more they had slowed down. So we were, obviously, because they're on a 400 meter track, we timed every single lap that everybody did. And we could, and we were asking them every 20 minutes, how, you know, did they have any gastrointestinal symptoms? If they were, how severe were they? And as I said, the ones who had the worst symptoms, which, like I said, kind of makes sense, were then the ones who were slowing down the most. So that's, I think at that level, yes, there is a potential that probiotics could, in some circumstances and with particular products, you know, if they've been shown to reduce symptoms, could, as I said, I do see that as a difference. If they don't improve performance, they sort of stop your performance from worsening. Yeah. That's a better way to look at it.
It's like being good at the swim in the triathlon. It's not going to win you the race, but it definitely can lose you the race. But let's talk about like just the overall health of an athlete, because at the end of the day, like elite athletes, they're durable. They don't get sick often. They don't miss a lot of training. And that's why they're able to compete at a high level consistently. And I think that's where, from my understanding of probiotics, where that could be the most help. And that's kind of what you were talking about just now here. So what about like probiotics makes somebody healthier?
I think it's I don't know if it's they make you healthier. I don't know if we know that yet. I think there is good evidence that there is a reduction in your risk of becoming ill.
Okay. And why?
But again, I think whether that's because you're healthier, or again, maybe it's just because an acute bout of illness can't take hold. So if there is a pathogen, if you're exposed to a pathogen, maybe it's just that the probiotics have mechanisms in which they can stop that. But certainly that your risk of becoming ill. So again, from the position stand last year, I think there were 21 papers off the top of my head that had looked at the effect of probiotics on, so specifically upper respiratory tract infections, so coughs and colds. I think of those 21, 14 showed positive outcomes for probiotics compared to placebo. So that was either a reduced risk of becoming ill, or in some of the papers, there was no, the proportion of people that became ill were the same, but maybe the illness was less severe in the probiotics group. So maybe symptoms didn't last as long. So instead, sure. So from that point of view, you return to training sooner. Yeah. As I said, I think the mechanisms are so difficult to tease out, but that's where some of these like end goal real world measures are important, aren't they? Because for some athletes, the mechanism is important, but some athletes, it is a case of, okay, well, will this mean that I'm, you know, less likely to become ill, or I'm more likely to recover from it quicker?
Yeah. So what kinds of probiotics were in those studies that have shown to kind of, you know, maybe increase immunity, or, you know, probably that's more aligned than make you healthier, but, you know, up your defense to disease. Yeah. Like, what probiotics have been shown to do that? Because I know there's a lot of different types and kinds and brands out there.
This is the one where it becomes so difficult. I think probiotics is the most difficult market for athletes and consumers, because, as you said, if you look at a vitamin D study or all the evidence, vitamin D, as long as it's vitamin D free and it's the, you know, a particular dose, it almost doesn't matter if you get it from company A, B, or C. But with probiotics, it is different. So, as I said, so probiotics are live bacteria, but different companies will not only use different strains, but they can also use different species as well. And I think if you just think of it from a species point of view, it's a bit like saying humans are really good runners, but then looking at a completely different species of animal and saying, okay, well, this animal must be a good runner, because, you know, and that's the sort of level that you have to think about it. So you have to make sure that you get the right species and then potentially the right strain. Most of the species that have been used come from the one of two genera. So it's either Bifidobacterium or Lactobacillus. Even within that, there are some new ones that start to come to the market and being looked at. Those two, though, are traditionally the ones that have been used most in research for athletes.
And what were those two again?
So it's Bifidobacterium or Lactobacillus. And that's the sort of two. And you sometimes see products that have maybe one specific bacteria. You'll sometimes see ones that have 4, 5, 6, even 10 different species in the product. Mm. The doses can range from maybe 9 billion. And so the unit is colony forming unit, CFU. So you can have, you'll have seen like Yakult, for instance, the fermented yogurt drink that sort of most people usually think of when they think of a probiotic. That's normally a good place to start. That has somewhere around about 9 billion, and it has one bacterial strain in there. That can then range all the way through to, there are products on the market with 450 billion, wow, and it has 10 different strains. So that's where you can see that even just those two examples, you can see how different products can be that are available on the market. And then, as I said, what makes it more tough and challenging for us as researchers is that we'll often only be using one strain,
sure,
because you said you're looking at your active ingredient versus your placebo. Yeah. You're not necessarily trying to say, okay, active ingredient versus active ingredient versus active ingredient versus placebo. So you very rarely see a study that says, okay, how about this probiotic versus this probiotic? Yeah.
Interesting. So do you personally take a probiotic?
No. So, and people are only surprised by that. So I do this research, and no, I don't currently.
Why?
I think it comes down to the way I've always tried to frame it is this: if I worked for a sports team or a club or an athlete with unlimited money, I would definitely write down a list of all of the supplements where there is good enough evidence that I think that it could have a benefit for the athlete, while also very, very low chance of something negative happening from it. So side effects or contamination or anything like that. If I could do that, then yeah, of course, there's probably maybe 10 supplements that you could make an argument for, you know, that it'd be a small but significant number of supplements. That's not the real world though, is it? For the real world is that, okay, there's a cost to this. And even if that cost is financial, even with good sports organizations, you still have a supplement budget for some of the teams and athletes I've worked with. You still have a budget. And it's okay if my budget, then I now have to not only say which ones work, but what are my priorities? And then I think, okay, well, in the winter, especially here in the UK, vitamin D supplementation is a priority. For some athletes, then it could be, depending on what sport they're in, it might be something like creatine, or it could be fish oils. Or for me, it's just that at the moment, the evidence base that I see it, yes, there are effects, but how big are those effects? And are they bigger than what I couldn't get from food and diet? And again, I don't, especially at the minute with COVID and lockdown, I don't travel internationally. I think if that was the case, it might be different. I'm not on any sort of medications, any like anti-inflammatories or any antibiotics. So I think the evidence for probiotics at the minute is that if I had an athlete who has a long history of upper respiratory tract infections throughout the winter, I would consider supplementing during the winter as almost that immune package, if you like. And then one of the things that we've done with some of the governing bodies and the teams that we've worked with is to say, okay, it may not be something that we use every day or every week for our athletes, but if we're going to travel to an international competition, so if we're traveling from the UK to Tokyo for the Olympics, we know that with international travel for sports competitions, often the second most common illness is acute gastroenteritis. So okay, one of the things that we're going to put in the supplement stack would be probiotics in that instance. If we know that an athlete is going into surgery or they're going to go on to antibiotic treatments at some point, definitely we'll have that sort of intervention in place to say that when the time comes, this will be the probiotic we use. If we have healthy athletes training regularly who aren't getting in all the time, I just personally, I don't think it's there yet.
Yeah. In that example, you said like to potentially add a probiotic when you're going to a big meet out of town and stuff. I would probably advise to test that first somewhere else, just so you know you're not going to react with it.
It's once we get those sort of times in our, as I said, so it's maybe something that we just reserve for specific situations, and it's okay. Once we know that that's our end goal, what's the plan now going to be in the build up to that? So say for the Football World Cup with one of the governing bodies, we sat down maybe like 6 months before the World Cup, and it was which probiotics are we going to consider a probiotic? Which one could work? Is there a competition or a game beforehand that has travel that we could test this out? If not with all the players, with some of the players, maybe we need to start them, taking it 4 or 6 weeks before, just to make sure that they're happy and everything looks good from that point of view. So yeah, like I said, it's just that I think the best evidence for probiotics at the minute are in some of those specific scenarios, rather than just saying, well, look, here's just another supplement for somebody to take, and they're walking around they're almost rattling because they just
No, I'm glad you say that, because kind of my stance on supplements is less is more. And I, like you, the only supplement I take and just during the winter is vitamin D, just because I, like you, have the same type of climate. During the winter, you don't get a lot of sun or get outside very much, and I find that helps kind of the winter blues and stuff. But other than that, I try to get my nutrients from food. So what have you, like, if you could have, like, you know, say somebody wanted to boost their immunity naturally, whether they think they're about to get sick, somebody in their close to them is sick, they're going to be traveling, like, what types of foods would be good to consume to increase that kind of gut health?
I think it's the same old boring ones, isn't it? It's lots of fruits, lots of vegetables, good sources of fiber, and which will then have some natural prebiotics. So as opposed to probiotics are the bacteria themselves or are the live organisms. Prebiotic is essentially the food you would give them. So they are typically undigested carbohydrates that can go through the stomach, go through the small intestine without being absorbed, and then they reach the large intestine where all of that bacteria live, and the bacteria there can feed off all of this undigested food. The more nourishment you give them, the more some of these healthy populations can thrive. But you can get that, all of that from as a just good variety of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and there are fermented foods that you can get which will have, in some instances will have both, will have some bacteria, normally much, much lower than numbers than you get in a probiotic supplement, but there'll be some there. But you'll also be getting some of the prebiotic foods in there as well.
Sure. Is that like kombucha or stuff like that?
Yeah, kombucha, kimchi, sourdough bread. And some of the processes that you make them, so with sourdough bread, for example, the bacteria will be dead because by the time you put them in the 300 degrees Celsius or whatever, you're going to wipe them out. But they'll have still been there. And like I said, some of the mechanisms by which they were will still be active. So they won't be metabolically active anymore, but the proteins on their surface will still be there and still be detected by immune cells within the body. So I think it's having that solid nutrition base. Like I said, are you eating all of the colors of the rainbow? Mm. Are you getting good portions of fiber in, potentially regularly throughout the day, not just at one meal or one snack. I think if you cover that, then from a gut health point of view, I think that's the best evidence base we've got at the minute, is the most solid evidence base for an otherwise healthy individual. And there are going to be caveats to that, because like I said, because we know that for some individuals with either irritable bowel syndrome, or we've now started to see with some of our athletes, there are particular fermentable foods that can give them symptoms. So almost they're more vulnerable to experience symptoms from them. So in those individuals, you would obviously then need to cut some of them and see from that. So it is always caveated a little bit, because like I said, people will have
everybody's unique. I've said this multiple times on this podcast, is there's science and then there's you, and there's even in science and research it could be a solid trend line where this something works for the majority of the population, but there's always that population that doesn't work for, and that could be you at the end of the day. So you have to test things out for yourself. But I think an important note that you said there is keep in mind that your stomach, your intestine already has this bacteria. So it's not like you're taking a probiotic to add something new to what's already there. It's like adding more people to your army. And then if you're eating the right prebiotic foods, fruits, vegetables, that kind of stuff, it's like feeding your army. So you can feed your army to grow, or you can add to it to grow. Would that be kind of an accurate analogy?
Yeah, definitely. I always use the analogy of a rainforest. So from the moment you are born, this rainforest is starting to grow. And the most important times for all of us are those early years, so it's another one of those things that by adulthood, a lot of it is already too late. So our method of birth, whether we were breastfed or bottle fed, whether we had exposure to antibiotics as a baby or an infant, all of those factors, you can still correlate to many, many measures of the bacteria in adulthood. So all of that plays into it. So like I said, by the time you reach adulthood, you have this fully established rainforest, and it's really, really stable. So even if you have antibiotic treatment, which essentially will wipe out large portions of it, in the immediate aftermath, you'll have times where pathogenic bacteria have an opportunity to thrive for a little bit, and that you could have some diarrhea, you could be ill off the back of that. But after a few weeks or months, that rainforest goes back to looking pretty much what it looked like before in a lot of instances. So it is really stable. So as you said, so it's not for a bacteria deficiency that we need some of these things. Sometimes it's just a tiny little tweak here or there, or it's just putting something extra in that means that if that, you know, you put some one little bit of good in, so then if something bad comes in, it maybe can't have the effect that it would otherwise. But yeah, listen, it's not like other vitamins, mineral supplements where you're trying to correct a particular deficiency or anything like that.
So you had mentioned like fruits, vegetables, you know, as good prebiotic foods. If you go to kind of the opposite spectrum of really highly processed, you know, foods out of the box and that kind of stuff, what does that type of food do to the gut?
It's difficult because these things are so tough to study. So when you start, and you know, if you start from some of the animal models, we start to see that excessive consumption of sweeteners, excessive consumption of emulsifiers do appear to have negative effects. Where we're starting to struggle is that if you translate that over to human studies, the quantities would almost be impossible to reach. You would almost have to be eating them pure rather than the small amounts that are in foods. So I think in terms of the negative impact, I think, again, it's one of those where it's not necessarily that they are completely negative, more than just that you're taking away a feeding opportunity to have had something better, if that makes sense. So we know that, to go back to the rainforest analogy, the more diverse it is, the better that it seems. So the more resilient it is, the more it seems to be able to fend off against any potential attackers, if you like. And so you get a more diverse rainforest by eating lots of different foods and giving them lots of different nourishment. Populations that eat more highly refined diets seem to have a less diverse rainforest. So it looks a lot more similar throughout. So that is some of the potential ways in which you could have a negative consequence. And then just some of the other metabolites that they give off. Like I said, the bacteria that live in your intestine are the same as a probiotic in that they are active. They are doing things. They're alive. Some of the things that they give off, so they can give off short-chain fatty acids, which are slightly anti-inflammatory. We know that the bacteria that produce the most short-chain fatty acids and the beneficial short-chain fatty acids are often the ones that thrive from, again, diets more rich in fermentable carbohydrates and things like that. So your fruits and vegetables. So it's I think it's just that you're seeing lower amounts of all of that good side of things. I think that's the main reason that you would try to avoid those sorts of diets. Sure.
That makes sense. Cool. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time here, Jamie. It's certainly been a pleasure getting all the insights from you. If somebody is listening to this and they want to follow along with your work and the research that you're doing, how can somebody kind of follow along with you?
No, it's been great to come on. The best place is probably Twitter. I don't always tweet a lot of my own tweets, but I certainly try and reshare a lot of cool things that I try and see in this area. So it's @pew_Jamie on Twitter is the best place.
Sounds good. Well, we'll have links to that in the show notes. And then I'm going to try to spell out those two bacteria, the bifidobacterium and lactobacillus, in the show notes as well, just so somebody can say, okay, this is what they were talking about, rather than trying to spell it themselves as well. So you'll have that in the show notes and all that. So thanks, Jamie, for being on.
Jace, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Any questions, as I said, from listeners, just feel free to pass them on, and it'd be great to hear from people and talk about this some more. Sweet.
All right, episode's over. If you found value in this episode, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. And if you haven't already yet subscribed, do so now so you don't miss any important topics in the coming week. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the show, please send them my way. I am most responsive on Instagram. That's @jcheese, J-A-E, cheese, like the food, or email me directly at Jase, J-A-S-E, at scienceofsportsrecovery.com. Talk soon.